Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
You're listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
And welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, Games Galore 42. I am your host, Brian Edwards. We are in Harbo's studio. What's happening, Harbo?
Not much, man. Just enjoying our win from the weekend and relaxing.
That was a gorgeous snoozer of a co-main event. Derek Black Beast Lewis is Harbo's brief gambling career continues successfully. He went 3-1 in a UFC event about 6-9 months ago. Then he almost hit Michigan at 60-1, and then he hits 25 on Derek Lewis to win 74.
It's pretty good odds.
So Harbo's like 4-2 all the time, but I mean, you don't count the Michigan as a loss. I mean, it was $10.
It was almost a long bet.
It almost paid you. It entertained you for months,
for sure.
Yeah, we'll touch on UFC in a little bit, but we got to get to these games of the year. You know, we touched on the South Point games of the year about a little over a month ago. The Westgate Superbook, Jay Cornegay and company released college football games of the year and win totals and conference championship odds. Still no division odds yet. And I'm, as I've said, I want Wisconsin to be -150 or cheaper to win that side of the Big Ten, because that is just such a outstanding guaranteed winner, as it was last year, as you were told on Games Galore Pods last summer, just like the South Carolina over, which is going to be a winner. Again, we've spoken ad nauseum about South Carolina, Georgia week two. As everyone knows, I'm calling for the upset, and I love them, plus the 14. So, you know, I figured Westgate would come out with Georgia south of 14. Nope, 14.5. Unbelievable. Unfreaking believable. I wrote a column today about the games of the year that I like. We'll go over those in a few, but I'm kind of just going to skim. Start with week two. I'm going to skip some of them, but the ones that certainly, well, obviously we have audience in Vegas. You can bet on anything there. So, but you know, we have a lot of SEC listeners, so you know, kind of concentrate on those. And so anyway, week two, here we go. Mississippi State at K-State. Mississippi State -2.5. Like I said, when Auburn went to K-State 3-4 years ago, all you want to do is get to Manhattan, get that W by 1 point, get on that airplane, and get the fudge out of there. And Auburn was extremely fortunate. K-State just blew that game a few years ago on a I think it was on a Thursday night, maybe a Friday night. No, I'm pretty sure it was Thursday. But anyway, that's what Miss State wants to do when they are at K-State, -2.5 at the Westgate. Now, these were the openers on Sunday that Jay emailed out. I saw our guy Brad Powers, who was on with us a couple weeks ago and was fantastic. Games Galore 40. If you didn't hear all his insight, gave away a bunch of win totals. You want to go back and check that out. I saw a tweet from Brad. It was either yesterday or the day before that noted a few line moves. But if I'm remembering correctly, and I'm not looking at it now, I believe he pointed out one line move, and then he said the rest of them were just a half point or a point. So some of these lines may have changed a touch, but not by much. And you'll notice that some of them are quite a bit different from what the South Point had. And I DM'd KIV, and I'm going to send her some money to go get me some of those Gamecocks +14.5. I hope that's one that hasn't moved. All right, also week two, Clemson. -12.5 at Texas A&M. When we went over our SEC West schedules, I pointed out that A&M plays on Thursday in the opener against Northwestern State, whereas Clemson does not play on Thursday. So slight advantage there with A&M, a couple more days to prepare. But as I said, it is not going to matter. Might matter with the point spread, though, as Clemson is 12.5 at A&M. Stanford -4 against USC. Yeah, if you were at the South Point, and I remember Brad Powers talked about this is a play of his. South Point opened this one at 2 or 2.5, and I know Brad got it, and I sure as hell wish I would have gotten it. I have an account that posts games of the year, but I don't know why they haven't yet. I would think they... I looked yesterday. I thought for sure they'd have them, but they don't. So now it's Stanford -4. Now that it's above 3, when I know I could have had it 2, 2.5, had I been in Vegas, that is. I'm not as attracted to it. I still lean Stanford there. Cal -4 at BYU. That's a garbage game. Michigan State -10 at ASU. I liked how Gam Liu, he's kind of like me, man. He likes Herm Edwards, while seemingly everybody in America just hated the hire. We'll see. All right, week 3. Thursday, BC at Wake. Wake's -2. FSU -9.5 at the Cuse in the Carrier Dome. I like the Cuse there. Get into that a little more later when I list my favorite games of the year. Oklahoma, huge revenge game, as they are -11 at Iowa State, one of the biggest upsets of the season last year when the Cyclones went into Norman and pulled that absolute shocker. So big revenge angle for OU, -11 at Iowa State. Boise State at Oklahoma State. The boys from Boise, they'll go play anybody, anywhere, just like Pat Hill and Fresno used to do a decade and change ago. And Oak State's in a transition year. Pokies -4 against the Broncos. Houston at Texas Tech. Texas Tech -4. Speaking of revenge game, humongous revenge game for Drew Locke and the Mizzou Tigers, as they are at Purdue in a pick'em, as Purdue went into Mizzou last year and just dealt out pimp slap treatment. That was one of the bigger stunning scores of all last year. That was kind of Jeff Brohm's little breakout game, if you will. Yeah, I was even entertaining Brohm maybe replacing Swamp Donk McElwiener. Texas -4.5 against USC. Big revenge game for Texas. Double OT game at the Coliseum last year. They really should have won that game. All right, the next week, where are we? Week 4. Doubleheader on Friday night. Penn State -28.5 at Illinois. Lovie Smith's got to show improvement this year. I think he's going to be shown the door. I actually thought that was a pretty good hire. Well, I mean, not many people are going to take the Illinois job anyway. I thought Illinois getting a guy who'd coached in the Super Bowl before as a head coach was a pretty good get, but hadn't worked out so far. I don't think it's going to get much better this year. Washington State at USC. Oh, boy, that was one of my favorite games last year. Washington State is a home dog on that Friday night against USC. A pounded Luke Falk and company and Mike Leach. And I still thank the heavens that Mike Leach did not go to Tennessee. But with Luke Falk gone, a lot of guys gone, and the tragic death of Tyler, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Helinski, as he passed away during the offseason. They've got the East Carolina grad transfer, Minshaw, I believe. I think that's going to be Leach's starter. I'm sure he's got a redshirt friend. I mean, whoever Leach throws in there is going to be pretty good at quarterback because he coaches them up. So USC -15.5 against Washington State in a big revenge game. That was just easy pickings with the Cougars last year. All right, as we get into Saturday, Notre Dame -7 at Wake. West Virginia -7 versus KIV's alma mater, the K-State Wildcats. Michigan -17 versus Nebraska. Man, I'm going to have to let Gary and Damon, when I go on Sharp and Benning in the morning, as I do every Thursday morning at 10:45 Central AM, I'm going to have to share these Nebraska games of the year. And I mean, they're catching like 15 or 16 and just about every one, and they're catching 17 at the Big House on September 22nd. Wisconsin -10.5 at Iowa. Alabama -24 against the Dumbo Fishers of, well, yeah, I just like to call him Dumbo. The Aggies. Texas minus 5.5 against TCU. I can just already tell you, Texas is getting a little too much cred from the odds makers, in my opinion. That's a game TCU can win outright for sure. Stanford, pick 'em at Oregon. Lean to Caden Smith, KJ Costello, Bryce Love. That Stanford offense, I've said it a bunch, but for first-time listeners, that Stanford offense is going to be nasty this year. I mean, you got a solid quarterback, Costello, 14-4 TDINT ratio last year. You've got Caden Smith, perhaps the best tight end in the country. You've got Bryce Love, who had just, what, over 2,000 yards last year, and he was basically, you know, playing on one leg half a season. He's the best running back in the country, in my opinion, for sure. So we move to the next week. Friday night lights, UCLA at Colorado, Colorado minus one. By the way, UCLA is going to be dog shit this year. I don't care if they have Chip Kelly. They're going to be terrible. Ohio State minus 5 at Penn State. Big revenge angle for Trace McSorley, James Franklin and company, but no Saquon Barkley anymore. But they've got highly recruited young running backs to fill in there, and I think they'll be good there. FSU minus 3.5 at Louisville. I've kind of alluded to this a little bit during the summer. I kind of just trust Petrino that Louisville's offense will be okay. I don't know about the defense, though. He's got Van Gorder taking over at DC now. So that's his second former Georgia AD he's hired as, not AD, my bad, DC, defensive coordinator. All right, so Texas minus 7.5 at K-State. There you go again with Texas getting a little too much respect from the odds makers, I believe. The Gators, oh my God, I can't believe that Florida, Tennessee, I mean, I can because Tennessee is not good, and Florida might not be good if they don't get any quarterback play. But still, for Florida, Tennessee to not be listed is pretty odd. But so the Gators, first game they've got on the games of the year, at least. Plus 3 at Scott Field, where the Gators have only won once and didn't cover with Tebow. That's their only win going back at least early 80s, maybe even the 70s. Actually, I think it was early 80s. Anyway, I think I looked that up on the air not too long ago. All right, USC minus 4 at Arizona. Woo! Slight lean to Khalil Tate and the boys there. I mean, USC, who's going to be their quarterback? Darnold's gone. All right, Stanford at Notre Dame. So you could have had Stanford plus 8 at the South Point. They sent out a horrible opening number. And but it moved to 6, and now Westgate with a correct number, Notre Dame minus 3. Boy, I would have – man, that's another one. I got to start going out to Vegas for these games of the year releases. Okay, so we move on to – what is this, October 6th weekend? Yeah.
What week are we in?
We are in week 6 now, that first weekend of October. Clemson minus 17 at Wake Forest. Miami minus 5.5 against FSU. I think the South Point had that like 8 or 9. I know the South Point opened LSU as a 3.5-point favorite at Florida, and it was one of their biggest movers. It moved down to LSU minus 1. Well, Westgate goes to the Gators minus 1. Nebraska, here we go, Nebraska again, another huge dog spot, plus 16.5 at Wisconsin, and I think they get throttled by Wisconsin there. Slight lean Wisconsin. Auburn minus 7 at Mississippi State. Now, I had to look at their schedules because I was thinking Mississippi State plus 7 would be my play. And I'm not going to say that I still don't lean that way, but with all the emotions the week before, with Dan Mullen being their old coach, with Mullen, you know, coming back to Starkville, in other words, Mississippi State has the Gators the week before at home, and I think that's a game they're really going to be gunning for. just, you know, with the mullet factor. I mean, I know when Oscar Mayer Wiener left the Gators, if we were playing Ohio State 2 years later, that would be the game on the schedule, even ahead of the semis.
Right.
And I never say a game's more important than semis. Like, you never say a game's more important than Sparty and Big Blue, do you?
No. Maybe Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio. Maybe Ohio State. Yeah. Actually, I would say that probably is the bigger game.
Yeah, they're close.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of rivals.
Yeah. So do the Gators. So do the Gators. We have that in common.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hate a lot
of them. They all want blood.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to say, LSU and Florida used to have a friendly rivalry. Joe Oliva took care of that piece of shit. Red River. Cotton Bowl, Dallas, Oklahoma -5 at Texas, Washington -17 at UCLA. Thursday of the next week. So we're talking an October 13th weekend, but on Thursday, TCU -11.5 against Texas Tech. By the way, Kingsbury's on the hot seat in Lubbock. Arizona at Utah, Utah -4.5 on a Friday. That's a good Friday night, mid-October. I bet the weather in Salt Lake will be wonderful. That's a good ball game that right there. We'll have Khalil Tate. Whittingham. I read Whittingham's the third longest tenured coach in the country.
How many years?
I think it's his 14th. Let me go to my Utah page. 14th. He was outdone by Gary Patterson and Kirk Ferentz at Iowa. I think Ferentz is maybe in his 20th year.
14 years is a long time, man.
Yep. Coach, when I say coach, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I didn't even spend that much time in the public school system.
Right? Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thanks. I got out ahead of 14.
Congratulations on that. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a long run, man.
Yeah, it is. It is. I was going to say, Spurrier, he said 12 years is long enough.
Gotcha.
At an SEC school.
He's out.
Yeah, so, yeah, he checked out. Well, he wanted to go call some ball plays in the pros. Didn't work out so well. All right, October 13th. All right, Michigan, Big Blue, -3.5 versus the Badgers. Whew, Wisconsin's going to be good.
Yeah, they are.
Michigan State at Penn State. Penn State 8.5. That's the best division in football, that side of the Big Ten, with Big Blue, with Sparty, with PSU, and the Fighting Oscar Wieners. Texas A&M -2.5 at South Carolina. South Carolina all day. I mean, really? How the hell is Texas A&M favored in that game? How? How? I don't understand that. That's crazy. I just don't get the what do people not see in this South Carolina team? I mean, what are they looking for that they're not getting on this roster? I mean, I don't get it. A&M favored over South Carolina in Columbia is just nonsense. South Carolina wins outright, should be favored. I wrote again in my article on VI, VegasInsider.com. I wrote I would make South Carolina a 3.5 or 4 point favorite over A&M on a neutral field, and they're +2.5 at home. Gamecocks all day. Now, I don't like it as much as I like them against Georgia +14.5, but I do like it. Georgia -10 at LSU. God, I just don't. I haven't seen Joe Burrow play, so. But I mean, that looked a little heavy to me. But I can't tell the audience to go bet LSU because I got to see what they have from their quarterback. I got to see it before I can put money on it. Washington -6.5 at Oregon. All right, to the next week on a Thursday, both teams coming off byes. Stanford -11 at the Fighting Herm Edwards. The Friday night, Boise State -21 at home to Colorado State. Air Force at UNLV, UNLV -1. Michigan -5 at Sparty. Big revenge game for Michigan. I lost way too much money eating that chalk on Michigan in that rain game against Sparty last year. That game sucked. And it was after I'd been in the swamp to watch us lose to LSU. 16 points.
Rough.
From the swamp talking Needlemeyer, Dougie, Needle Nussmeier. Oklahoma minus 6.5 at TCU. LSU minus 3 at home to Mississippi State. I like Mississippi State there. USC minus 4 at Utah. I like Utah there. And I'm going to go to my article that I wrote. I had some good home underdog stats for Utah. Arizona at UCLA. Pick them. I like Arizona there. Yeah, I like those three games that weekend. I had all three of those in my column. Miss State plus 3. Here, let me pull up my column, and I can go ahead and give you all my little cutie stats I brought out for those. Almost there. Okay. So, in my explanation of Mississippi State plus 3 at LSU, the Bulldogs have 2 weeks to prepare. Okay. Flip side of that, LSU, 8th game in 8 weeks. And the Tigers are at Florida and then host Georgia before that game. So that is the tail end of a brutal three-game stretch. And let's don't forget that LSU plays Miami and Dallas to open the year. And they also have to go to at Auburn in September. Mississippi State blasted LSU 37-7 last year. Nearly pulled off that crazy comeback in Baton Rouge the year before. Had the ball driving down 23-20. They had been down 23-3 at halftime, but LSU held on. And then in 14, Dak took them there, and they were just crushing them. They were up like 34-10 or something, and LSU rallied and only lost by 5, but that was a misleading final. Both teams went 9-4 last year, but Mississippi State brings back 9 starters on offense, 8 on defense. LSU, on the other hand, 10 total starters back, 5 apiece on each side. Utah, USC, 3 of the past 4 games in this rivalry have been decided by 8 combined points. So we've been getting nail biters in this rivalry. Since 2012, Utah 6-3 against the spread, 9 games as a home dog. Last decade, USC 15-24 ATS as a road favorite. And last, it's a big revenge game for Utah. They were up 21-7 at half at the Coliseum last year. USC scored 21 unanswered, was up 28-21. Utah scored with 42 seconds left, and Whittingham decided to go for 2. And they missed it. So Utah went 7-6 straight up last year, but they were 10-3 against the spread. 4 of their losses were one possession games. 3 of the L's by 7 combined points. And how about this for a nugget? Best special teams in America, that's Utah. Their punter won the Ray Guy Award 2 years ago and was a second team All-American last year. Their place kicker won the Lou Groza Award last year and was a first team All-American. So I mean, that's huge. When you've that's what the Gators had last year, basically. But I think Pinero and Townsend only got fourth team All-American each, so it's even a better situation, I guess, if you go by the awards.
So they have stellar kickers.
They have a stellar kicking game. That's hey, that can be big.
For sure.
It can be big.
You need them when you need them.
Hard right here, Harbo. Hard right. Other. Hey, your other right? Oh, wait, you're married. I forgot. She's smiling. Did she see me looking at her rather than you?
I'm going to say it was you.
Okay. All right. Okay, now I do want a Budweiser. Not right now. Before the next segment. Okay. Where were we? Okay. October 20th?
26th?
Yep. That's much better. Yeah. For the Friday games. Miami minus 7 at BC. Hey, cold weather game there. Careful. I just don't have enough confidence in BC's quarterback situation. But, what a battle of wits with those head coaches, Steve Adazio and Mark Richt. I hope you pick up the tone of bullshit or facetiousness on that battle of wits. But the cold weather could be a factor for those Canes up in Beantown late October. Could run into some 35-degree weather. Hell, Maybe even snow.
It could be freezing.
Could be really cold. Wyoming at Colorado State. Colorado State minus one. Utah, pick 'em at UCLA. And got to go to the next page now. Good time for a break, I think, Harbo. Games Galore 42. Russell Smith is going to join us to talk some Vols and some SEC here in a bit. Don't go anywhere. Right back. And welcome back, Games Galore 42. We got Russell Smith of Fox Sports Radio Knoxville coming up in a bit. We're going to get through the rest of these games of the year. So October 27th, Clemson minus 10 at FSU. FSU double-digit home dog spots. Not many the last two or three decades. And I don't know if this one will stick, but if it does, I'll have that stat ready for you around. I'm going to be in Vegas that weekend. Again, also going to be in Nashville October 13th for the Gators. Probably going to be in Biloxi at the Beau Rivage one weekend in September.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Can't wait. And they better not be with it. You know, they better have a legit, real, know what the hell they're doing, sports book.
Have you had to get in there and make it known?
I hadn't been there yet.
I got you.
I don't want some rinky-dink deal going, so.
Right.
All right, Texas minus two at Oak State. Okay, now there's maybe one Texas is not being given too much respect. But, you know, kind of like Petrino, I kind of trust Gundy on offense, but I don't know, man. He lost a lot of talent. Although he's got his stud running back, Justice Hill, coming back. But they only returned five starters on offense, seven on defense. But the defense was not that great last year. Okay, Wisconsin, minus 13.5 at Northwestern. We still don't know about Northwestern's Clayton Thorson, when he'll be back. I mean, I would think he'd be back by late October. I don't know if he has a red shirt to burn, if he wants to or not. I think he played as a true freshman. In fact, I can check that here real quick. Right here. Well, it normally just says whether he's a true or not on Phil Steele's little player breakdown, but he might have ran out of space and couldn't specify it, so I'm not sure on that one. A&M at Mississippi State. Mississippi State minus four. Now, this would have been one of my plays. However, as I'm getting to their page, I think A&M's got 2 weeks. Yeah, A&M has 2 weeks to prepare, whereas Mississippi State is coming off a game at LSU. So slight situational advantage for the Aggies. I still lean Mississippi State, but I would otherwise, if A&M didn't have 2 weeks to prepare, excuse me, and as we get to the later stage of the season, not that I think Dumba's a good coach or anything, but, you know, when you're going through a coaching change, you know, normally you're playing your better football later in the year as you're adapting to new schemes, systems, what have you. All right, Georgia's 13.5 to Florida. Now, the last time Georgia, were they favored by double digits over the Gators last year? Well, I got it right here. I'm sure they were. I think they were 14. But, I mean, they had not. Let's see. 13.5. I bet that was the first double-digit favorite spot for Georgia over Florida in 20 years.
20 years?
Maybe more. I'm just trying to think the years that they, even the years they beat, well, they only beat us once with Spurrier, and they went 1-2 against Zook. Now, they did go 3-1 against Muschamp, but, well, let's see. When did Muschamp left after 14? 13 was the 4-8 year, and they were only favored by 3 over us that year. Oh, and they beat us by 3. Ah, I was at La Playa watching that one. That one was another fucking miserable Saturday. I've had so many miserable fucking Saturdays the last 8 years.
Here's to some good ones.
Here's to some good ones in the future. All right. First weekend of November, getting chilly. FSU -3 and NC State, revenge game for the semis. Syracuse at Wake. Wake -7. Syracuse led at halftime by double digits over Wake last year, and then Wake went on to a 64-43 win. I had bet on Syracuse only because Eric Dungy had been listed probable all week and then did not play. All right, Penn State at Big Blue. Big Blue -6. You know, I'm pretty sure there's an advantage one way or the other. Somebody's got 2 weeks to prepare for that one. And
it's probably Penn State.
It is no. It's your boys, Big Blue.
We got
Blue.
It. Nice.
So, nice situational advantage for Michigan, and I bet there's a point and a half. Yeah, maybe just a point.
That's at the big house?
That's at the big house.
Oh, yeah,
minus
we got it.
-6. Nebraska at Ohio. Here we go, Nebraska again. My gosh. Those guys are going to be depressed when I tell them these lines. Nebraska's +21.5 at Ohio State. Iowa at Purdue. In terms of second place in that other side of the Big Ten, especially if Thorson doesn't get back for Northwestern, that's a pretty big game. Notre Dame -8 at Northwestern. I don't think they played last year, but I know Northwestern beat them as a double-digit dog on the road a couple of years ago. I don't think that was last year. Let me see. Huh.
They did play last year, didn't they?
Well... no, not last year. Wait, when did Northwestern... oh, God, it was all the way back in 2014.
Okay, wow.
See, you normally don't schedule a home-and-home for 14 and 18. But, yeah, I mean, I knew they won. Yeah, they were 17.5-point dogs in 2014, and they won in overtime 43-40. And that was a bad year for Northwestern. They had gone 5-7, actually back-to-back years, which doesn't happen under Fitzgerald much. Used to love Fitzgerald until I bet on him against the Kitties last year in that bowl game, and he went for it twice on fourth down and did not give it to his all-time leading rusher, Justin Jackson, on either occasion, and they got stopped both times. And one time he did it, he was on his own freaking 25, up 7 with like a minute 40 left. I think Kentucky had all three of their timeouts. It might have been like 2:20 left, but God, I'm still sore and bitter, all that.
Brian never forgets.
Mm-mm. Not that bullshit. Alabama -14 at LSU. That's their biggest spread at LSU in a long time. Oh, here's one I like. West Virginia +9.5 at Texas. Get out of here. Get out of here with that. That is just, that's nonsense. Look, I know West Virginia's defense is going to be shaky, but that offense, please. Greer, Sills, that offense is going to be nasty. Oklahoma -14 at Texas Tech. Who knows? That could be a must game for Kingsbury come early November. BYU at Boise State. Boise -20.5. BYU has had better days. I wonder how... I was thinking about that earlier or last day or two. Let me get to BYU's page. Okay, they go 4-9 last year. The fewest games they had won in the last 10 years was 7 in 2010. Like, I'm wondering, BYU might not have won less than 5 games in like a half century. Do you mind, will you Google when Lavelle Edwards got there? L-A-V-E-L-L, Lavelle Edwards. I'm thinking he got to BYU in the 70s.
Let's pull up this Wikipedia here.
Yeah, and just go down to...
1972.
Yep, okay. And scroll down and probably have his records for every year. I guarantee you they never had less than... Wait, okay, 72, they're... But they did it 5 wins in 73. I bet that's the fewest. Well, at least until 2000. And under Mendenhall, I don't think they ever had a four. Yeah, I think that was their worst season in a half century. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it was. So that's so there's that.
So Lavelle knew what was up.
Oh, God. Lavelle Edwards was a hell of a coach. BYU won a national title in the 80s. Listen to these quarterbacks they had in succession. Now, you're not going to have heard of all of them, but, and I don't know if I'm going to have the
start order. With the year I was born.
Correct. What year were you born?
88.
Oh, I'm starting way before that.
Okay.
All right. But you've probably heard of, oh, God, maybe you're not. It was 85 Bears. You ever heard of Jim McMahon?
Oh, yeah.
Quarterback of the 85 Bears? Yeah. Okay, he went there. I know you've heard of Steve Young, obviously. Of course, left hand for the Niners. Okay, he went there. But before them, they had Mark Wilson, who played for the Raiders. You spelled Mark with a C. They had, in fact, let's go. Who are their leading passer? In fact, Ty Detmer's their leading passer all time. He won the Heisman, I'm pretty sure. And their others are just because they were throwing it more. Because Max Hall and John Beck cannot wear the jock straps of all the other great ones. He had Jim McMahon, Ty Detmer, Steve Young. He had another one I'm forgetting. He had another great, Robbie Bosco. I mean, they had some great quarterbacks at BYU. And they won the national championship. I want to say it was like, look there. Is it whatever undefeated season they have? Back there in the middle, 84. 13-0. Are you able to click that Holiday Bowl? I think they played Michigan, actually, if I'm remembering correct. Is that it? Yep, Michigan.
Yep.
24-17. I was watching that game. You were not even a twinkle in your father's eye yet.
I was not.
And I was watching that game.
Oh.
Showing my age every day. Okay. Yeah, West Virginia plus 9.5. Like it. UCLA plus 12 at Oregon. Stanford plus 9.5 at Washington. Okay, now I can break out all my cute stats for the Stanford-Washington game. And I am well aware that they got shellacked 2 years ago at UW. But they returned the favor last year. That was a Friday or a Thursday night game. I was with my friend Rachel Barebow in Changing the Narrative. Hashtag. Right. I was with her watching that game. So it was Thursday night, wasn't it? Or maybe I was in that same bar the next night. Maybe it was a Friday night. Anywho. Nevertheless, so check out these stats for Stanford. 18 games. 18 games as underdogs on David Shaw's watch. 13-4-1 against the spread. They've been underdogs of 9.5 points or more. Only 3 times under David Shaw. They've won outright in all 3 of those instances. Like I was saying earlier, and I'm just reading what I wrote this morning. Stanford has the nation's best running back, Bryce Love. Perhaps the country's best tight end, Caden Smith. Solid QB, KJ Costello. Told you he's 14-4 TDINT last year. 2 outstanding wide receivers, JJ Arcega-Whiteside, Trenton Irwin, and the 4th best offensive line in the country per Phil Steele's national unit rankings. And then I wrote, other than at Alabama, I'd probably take Stanford plus 9.5 against any team at any venue. All right. Where was I? Okay. Okay, the next week, we're looking at a November 8th Thursday game, Wake at NC State. NC State minus 5. They still have Finley, but they lost all those stud D linemen. I think all 4 of them got drafted. In fact, I'm 99% sure they did. Louisville at the Cuse, short week. Ooh, if Dungy's healthy, perhaps an upset. Louisville minus 2.5. Did I say earlier that Syracuse is going to beat FSU outright in week 3? If I didn't, I'm saying it now.
There it is.
There it is. Miami minus 4.5 at Georgia Tech. Big revenge game for Georgia Tech from that monsoon game last year. Clemson minus 15.5 at BC. Again, I just have no confidence in BC's quarterback, but I like A.J. Dillon, the running back. I like their defense, even though Harold Landry's gone. Cold weather game. Slight lean to BC, but I got to watch their quarterback play. I just don't have any confidence in him. TCU at West Virginia in Morgantown. Nears. Mountaineers. Actually, I said Nears one time in my column. And like, you know, you put a little apostrophe, like,
yeah.
And you, but you say Bama, and, yeah, a little hyphen instead.
Yeah.
I did that, and some West Virginia fan got all over me on an email and told me that that's not to be done. And you know what? No, I mean, whatever, man. I mean, I kind of took the dude's advice.
Yeah.
Mean, I don't want anybody calling the Gators the Ers.
The Gates.
Well, FSU fans already say that. They spell it a way I don't like, but whatever. Ohio State minus 10 at Sparty. Penn State minus 1.5 at home to Wisconsin. Georgia minus 5 at home to Auburn. Bedlam in Norman. OU minus 13. Mississippi State in T-Town. Tide minus 19.5. Oregon at Utah. Pickett. FSU at Notre Dame. Notre Dame minus 5.5. Beat them by 1,000, Fighting Irish, if you feel like it. Next weekend, Miami minus 1 at Virginia Tech. Cold weather alert. Boy, the Canes have got a lot of cold weather games. Those Miami boys don't like playing in the cold. Remember the Pitt game last year?
Florida boys don't know how to handle it, man.
I mean, heaven forbid there's snow. They've never even seen it.
I mean, wasn't Pitt's quarterback out last year also when I think Max Brown was hurt? Anyway, Miami goes to Pitt, who finished 5-7, by the way, last year, and just got their ass beat as 11.5-point favorites in late November. Yeah, that's the cold weather factor for those South Florida boys. They don't like it. Careful up there in Blacksburg. Oh, by the way, big bad news. Oh, I didn't get to the Alabama bad news either. Hate when that happens, right?
Oops.
Yep. Well, Mook Reynolds of Virginia Tech was dismissed from the program Monday. He had 70 tackles last year, 7.5 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks, 1 pass broken up, and 4 QB hurries. He was the second leading returning tackler for the Hokies. Bad news. And Terrell Lewis, linebacker for Alabama, same said no timetable on the return. However, it is a torn ACL, so he's at least done for the regular season. Okay, we're going to take a break, get our guest, Russell Smith. I am going to go over those rivalry games, and we will touch on the UFC after the interview with Russell before we wrap up things. Don't go anywhere. Back in a minute. All right, welcome back. Games Galore 42. Let's get to our first and only guest of the day. His name is Russell Smith. He's the host of The Drive on Fox Sports Knoxville from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern every day. And you get that on 101.5 FM. You can follow him on Twitter at Russell _Smith. Russell has two S's and two L's. So follow him on Twitter at Russell. And that's 3 underscores in a row. And then Smith. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, man. Doing well, Brian. How are you?
Doing great, man. If I'm remembering correctly, we had you on like within minutes of Jeremy Pruitt's intro presser wrapping up. And so now you've obviously had a whole spring football, I'm sure many media appearances, and maybe you caught him talking to a booster club or two. Obviously you hadn't played a game yet, but your thoughts on what's been going on with the program since Pruitt took over, and obviously we're talking Tennessee Vols here, folks.
Yeah, man, I think people are cautiously optimistic. I mean, it's kind of the blank slate effect. You know, people can project their hopes and dreams upon him because there's nothing to go on. You know, Derek Dooley had been a head coach for 3 years. Butch Jones had been a head coach for 6 years. So you had some sort of track record off which to judge them. You don't have that with Pruitt. You know, he's never done it. You've got his track record to follow as defensive coordinator, and that's been stellar. But this is first-time head coach. So we've seen him a little bit out you know, he comes definitely from the Saban tree of he's not going to give much away. And it was almost comical during spring practice for his first four or five media opportunities. He would go to extraordinary lengths not to talk about any individual players. He just would not do it. And he lightened up a little bit on that as he went on. But he's not a guy that's wanting to hype up his team in any way at all. I'd imagine he'll be a pretty milquetoast appearance at SEC Media Days next week. And I think that's the way he likes it. He's old school. He just wants to put his nose to the grindstone and go about his business and as much anonymity as you can get these days. And that's what he's done so far.
So Keller Christ was playing some pretty good football for Stanford a couple years ago and had, I believe it was an ACL. It was a major injury that ended his season. And then, you know, kind of lost the job to Costello. So now he shows up as a grad transfer. Was Christ around in the spring? And if so, are you thinking he's going to end up being the starter? And I really have not done too much of my Vols homework, so if I'm way off on that, just absolutely correct me immediately. What's the situation there?
He was not here for spring practice.
I didn't think so.
I think he got here last month. He's been here for about a month. Yeah, I think he got here June for first session of summer school. And I've heard, you know, some pretty impressive things behind closed doors. We haven't seen anything, but he's a big guy. As you said, he's got some experience starting games in the Pac-12 at Stanford. He's got some wheels to him. I think before the ACL, I think he was actually I don't want to say dual threat, but as much as a Stanford quarterback can be a dual threat, you know, he was a threat to tuck it and run a little bit. So he's an interesting player. You've got Jarrett Garantano, who was the starter at the end of the year last year. He was a five-star recruit coming out of New Jersey a couple of years back. So it's a battle. And again, you know, I don't think Jeremy Pruitt's going to give anything away as far as who's the starting quarterback going to be. He said after the spring game, we'll know who our starter is sometime in the fourth quarter against West Virginia, which to me kind of implies that he might play them both in the first game. So I think it's going to be a true quarterback battle. I don't think one of those guys stands out head and shoulders above the other. I don't think it's a terrible problem to have. I don't think it's a situation where they don't have any quarterbacks. I think they're both pretty good prospects back there, but it'll definitely be interesting to see who comes out on top. And if Garantano is passed over, will he stick around or will he just pack up and leave and try and go find somewhere else to play? That's another storyline and another kind of facet of all this that Pruitt is going to have to manage.
We're talking to Russell Smith, and we're talking about the Vols, and you can check out Russell's show, The Drive, from 3 to 6 Eastern, Monday through Friday on Fox Sports Knoxville. You can also follow him on Twitter at Russell triple underscore, three of them in a row, Smith, and Russell has two S's and two L's. So Tennessee's win total out in Las Vegas is 5.5 at most books. A little bit of juice toward God, my eyes deceiving me there. Yeah, a little bit of the juice toward the under. Obviously, you got W's against East Tennessee State and UTEP and Charlotte. And with the way y'all have dominated Kentucky for so many decades, you got to probably, I know Benny Snell's a good running back. I have no idea what Kentucky's going to have at quarterback, though. But, I mean, you can pretty much count on those four wins. Obviously, there's plenty of other winnables when you talk about Ed Vandy. And, by the way, in the games of the year, Tennessee is a one-point favorite at Vandy. Missouri at home is winnable. Who knows with Florida's quarterback situation? At last look, and it's probably been a week, but I believe you are 9.5-point underdogs to West Virginia. What do you think? Well, where are you, and where do you think the fan base is on the expectations? And you know, where do you, are you thinking 6-6, 7-5, or just give us your thoughts there.
I mean, I think the 5.5 number is pretty spot on. I think if this team goes to a bowl game in year one under Pruitt after going 4-8 last year, I think that would be a fine job for year number one and set you up for some loftier expectations in year two. Look, I mean, Tennessee was a bad football team last year. Last in the SEC in scoring. They were 125th in the country in rushing defense, giving up over 251 yards a game. So, I mean, this was just a dumpster fire. Now, you know, all 4-8s are not created equal. You know, it was Tennessee a worse team than Kentucky, who they lost to last year, than Vanderbilt, who they lost to? I don't know. They probably have more talent on paper. I just think last year was such a dumpster fire and so toxic an environment around the program with fans turning on Butch Jones very early in the season that I think the team kind of quit down the stretch. So I think, you know, on paper, they're probably at least a 6 or 7 win team, and they were ranked going into the season. A lot of people forget that. Just fell apart on them. They had some injuries, and then the coaching situation was just a complete and total train wreck, as most people will recall. So I think that, you know, taking over, changing systems, you're going from a 4-3 to a 3-4 in defense, changing systems offensively, a lot of new players out there, and you open up with West Virginia on a neutral field, and they've got a pretty good team coming back this year. So, I just think you have to manage expectations for Tennessee. I think 6-6 would be a fine start for Jeremy Pruitt. Get to a bowl game, go recruit, and the expectations, I'd imagine, would ratchet up quite a bit going into 2019.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe the situations with the talented wide receiver Jennings and the oft-injured but a very good linebacker in Darren Kirkland, what are the status of those guys? Is Kirkland healthy, and is Jennings, has he been completely reinstated? Was he playing in the spring? And I feel like I had read that Kirkland might have been thinking about transferring, but I'm almost certain he didn't. Yeah. What's the status for those guys?
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee's going to need them if they're going to get bowl eligible. And Jennings was back with the team. It was kind of on a suspension-type deal where he was practicing a little bit, or I don't know, he might not have even been practicing during the spring. He was trying to, you know, basically prove to the coaches that he could fly the straight and narrow, and they set out all these, you know, bars that he would have to pass to get back with the team, and I believe so far he's done that, and by all accounts, he will be on the team this season, so that's a big boost for the offense. And then Kirkland, yeah, that's kind of a weird one. He's just a guy who is, you know, a pretty highly touted recruit, great athlete at linebacker, but just has not been able to stay healthy. He had a torn pec when he first got on campus as a freshman, and that kind of ruined the first half of that season. He had a sprained ankle at the beginning of his sophomore season that really set him back, and then an ACL in camp last year. So he's back. He did announce that he was going to transfer as a grad transfer about a month or two ago, and Jeremy Pruitt was able to talk him out of it. So he's going to come back. He provides some experience and leadership in those linebacking core. But yeah, those are two key guys that Tennessee is going to rely on as veterans who've played SEC football before, know what it's all about, and I think they are respected by their teammates as leaders as well.
Yeah, Kirkland is a really he's produced when he's been on the field and healthy. He's just been injured more often than healthy. All right, let's just kind of look around the SEC East. Everybody's got Georgia as the overwhelming favorite. I believe that South Carolina's got a great chance to beat them in week two. I'm of the belief that the team to challenge them is South Carolina. I mean, I like my Gators roster for the most part, but does it really matter if you don't have a quarterback? I mean, the last 8 years, Florida has had abysmal quarterback play and really squandered a couple of, like, national title level defensive units, but when you're just atrocious on offense and you get abysmal quarterback play, it really doesn't matter. So I just don't trust, you know, when Felipe
isn't
Franks,
it sad, you know,
go ahead.
Isn't it sad what's happened to our two programs?
Yes.
Brian, I mean, I was talking with Phil Steele about this earlier today on my show, and you know, 20 years ago, I mean, it was just Tennessee versus Florida. I mean, that was
the winner won the SEC East in mid-September.
Yeah, not just the East, but more often than not, the entire conference, because the West was down at that time. So, and now you fast forward 20 years later, and Florida has no offense. Tennessee has no defense and no offense last year. Both teams, when it, you know, if you could hop in Doc Brown's time machine and go back to 95, 98, that era of SEC football, and say, hey, Russell, Brian, 20 years later, both Florida and Tennessee are going to have a four-win season in 2017. You would have thought, that's crazy. There's just no way. There's no chance that happens, and yet here we are.
And, it should have been a tie, really, between the way we blew that game against you and then got it back with the Hail Mary.
As
John Kelly took over, man, the Vols are gonna miss John Kelly. Do you know, stop here, what team did he go to? I feel like I was in my NFL magazine flipping through, and I feel like I saw somebody got him in the fifth or sixth round, and I was like, John Kelly didn't go till the fifth or sixth round? That's a steal. Do you know off the top of your head where he went?
You'll have to double check.
Yeah,
I think he went to the LA Rams. Yeah, he was drafted in the sixth round by the Rams.
If Gurley gets hurt, he's going to be loving it, because that's a good team. All right. So who do you think? I think South Carolina is going to be the second best team. Who do you? And I also don't think Georgia is going to be as good as they were last year. I mean, you know, Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, and I mean, when you're talking best running backs at Georgia ever, you're talking some stiff competition.
Yeah,
but I mean, I think both those guys are in the top five. They're obviously behind Herschel, maybe behind Garrison Hurst, but probably behind Gurley. But I mean, those two guys were tough, and Roquan Smith might have been the best player in college. I think he went eighth overall to the Bears. I mean, they lost a lot. Now, I know DeAndre Swift is a big-time talent, and as long as he stays healthy, and I know they got Evander's son, Holyfield, but I think Georgia's going to take a bit of a step back. I mean, I've got them 10-2. Who is it for you that's going to be their biggest challenger in the East?
I would imagine it would be South Carolina or Florida. And, golly, you know, I mean, Florida just going with the coaching change, that's hard to pick. I mean, I think that Georgia is just head and shoulders above everybody. I was looking at an article, I can't remember where I saw this a couple of weeks ago, but they tallied up the number of, stars on each team, 3-star, 4-star, 5-stars, according to 247, I think. And they said they had, you know, Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida were all, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Florida were all surprisingly close. They all had in the mid-30s and 4- and 5-star players, 34, 35, 4- and 5-star players. Georgia had over 60.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the talent gap, Kirby Smart has taken advantage of Tennessee and Florida being way down, but he's also recruited up a storm down there. So, and that's not a gap that I don't think that closes in one recruiting class. I mean, you've got to have monster recruiting classes for 2 or 3 years in a row to catch up with that. They lose some guys, particularly on defense, I think. But in my opinion, they're still the class of the East. I would guess maybe South Carolina, just to, you know, if Bentley catches fire, maybe they could have a chance to pull that upset. But I think it's going to be tough for the Gamecocks.
You're quite familiar with Derek Dooley. I thought after – now, granted, Missouri's offense didn't really get it going until mid – late season, and they had some, yeah, I mean, they played Idaho and UConn, and we all know how Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas were down. So a lot of Drew Locke's offense he put up last year was against some shaky defenses. But nevertheless, I mean, I was betting on Missouri pretty much every week there, like mid-late October on. And, I mean, they bring back 9 starters on offense. They've got Locke. They did lose Jamon Moore, but they've got, like, the whole O-line back. They've got multiple running backs, but they got Derek Dooley as their OC. I'm just going to throw out a couple little SEC East questions, and you tackle whichever you want, or a little bit on all, or not really, whatever, wherever you want to go, just kind of wrapping up the East. So I want you to talk Derek Dooley with Missouri. And then what do you think for Vandy? Does Derek Mason got to win 6 to get to a bowl game? Or, because, I mean, really, I mean, who's on the hot seat in the SEC? I really only think it's Stoops and maybe Mason. Tackle whatever topics you want there, Russell.
Well, I could see Ed Ogeron's seat heating up pretty quickly. You know,
I left him out. Oh. Correct. You are correct. My bad.
Yeah, so that's one I've got my eye on. I just don't know that Vanderbilt cares enough. You know, if they win 6 games and go to a bowl game, they're not going to fire Derek Mason. In my opinion, he's done all right there. Derek Dooley at Missouri is something that I'll be interested in, just as a Tennessee guy. I'll be interested to see how he handles it. I mean, that was an interesting hire, to be sure. I think that, nobody's made more fun of Derek Dooley in Knoxville sports media than me. And, I think that he was a terrible fit as head coach here in Knoxville. But that's not to say that he can't be a pretty good coordinator. So, and he's never done that before. I think that that was a valuable step in his progression that he missed. You know, he got that Louisiana Tech job at a very young age. And probably mostly because of
name,
his last name. Yeah, and he stood by Saban for a couple of years down there at LSU and with the Dolphins. And he was the receivers coach and the tight ends coach and the special teams guy and all that. But he never had that key running in your progression as you climb that ladder of being a coordinator for a couple of years and showing that you can outthink the other guy and you can develop a quarterback or something like that. So, he's over there coaching the Cowboys receivers for the past couple of years. If he succeeds as Missouri's OC, I could see him getting another shot as a head coach, maybe not at a SEC school, but
Sun Belt Conference USA.
Yeah, something like that, or maybe even if, Virginia's his alma mater, if that were to come open in the next 5 years or so, maybe got a crack at something like that. But he has to be successful here. You would think, hey, if that's your goal is to be a head coach in college again, you got to be a coordinator, prove that you can do that. I mean, what better way than to go in there with a NFL, first round draft prospect at quarterback? You're not going to get a better chance than that. Even if their defense can't slow anybody, ADs will look at offense as, your numbers there. And if he's able to be successful, then he might have another chance someday. But yeah, that's definitely, that was an eyebrow raiser when I saw that across Twitter a couple of months ago. I was like, what?
Right.
Derek Dooley. Yeah. Okay. So he comes back to Knoxville in November. Shouldn't be quite as dramatic as Lane Kiffin returning a couple of years ago with Alabama, but pretty interesting stuff anyway.
All right, we're wrapping up with Russell Smith. Follow him on Twitter at Russell3_Smith. Russell's got 2 S's, 2 L's. You can check out, obviously, for those of you who live in Knoxville, check him out Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 Eastern. He's the host of The Drive, Fox Sports Knoxville. You can also check it out on the internet. Hoops, I think also when we talked to you last, it was when Pruitt got hired, so it was early December. I think that North Carolina and Tennessee were about to play that weekend. And what a great season it was for Tennessee. And just a heartbreaking loss to Loyola Chicago. But I mean, did y'all lose anybody? Did literally everybody come back, or maybe did you lose a walk-on? I mean, y'all have everybody back, right? Was there an impact?
So they lost James.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They lost James Daniel III. James Daniel III, who was a grad transfer, as backup point guard, played a lot for Tennessee last year, and they didn't really replace him. They thought they were going to get a grad transfer from Richmond by the name of Quan Four, and they couldn't get him into school for some reason. He ends up going to Louisville, and doesn't look like they're going to find. You know, if Tennessee is one, you know, turned ankle in the backcourt away from being in pretty bad shape. But, yeah, I mean, coming out of nowhere, picked 13th in the league, next to last in the league coming into the season, and won the regular season conference championship, shared it with Auburn. So, phenomenal year. I'll admit, man, when Donnie Tindall got fired a couple of years ago and Dave Hart hired Rick Barnes, I was kind of skeptical. I was like, why would you want to hire a guy who Texas basically got tired of and ran out? You know, it'd be like, you know, somebody hiring Philip Fulmer in 2009, like right after Tennessee ran him out. But I was wrong. You know, there were the first two years they were right around 500, and you weren't really expecting anything last year because there's not a lot of star power in terms of, you know, top 100 NBA type recruits on the roster. But boy, they had a fantastic year. You're right, they bring pretty much everybody back, and they're going to be expected to defend that title because they've got a really deep team.
Now, because you're losing nobody, did they not bring in one single true freshman, or did they have any scholarships to sign anyone?
Yeah, they brought in a kid by the name of DJ Burns, who is a four-star player from South Carolina. Is the highest-rated player that Rick Barnes has signed. He was actually a 2019 prospect and reclassified this summer. And you know, he sounds like a fabulous prospect, but I don't know that where he gets his minutes from, because Grant Williams is the returning SEC Player of the Year. He's going to play a lot in the post. You got Admiral Schofield, who went through the NBA pre-draft stuff this summer. He's going to play a lot. Kyle Alexander returns as a senior shot blocker, really nice player for Tennessee. And then you've got Derek Walker, John Fulkerson, guys who have already played a lot coming off the bench. So there's been some talk that Tennessee might actually want to redshirt DJ Burns. That's kind of how deep they are, particularly in the front court. But Rick Barnes has built this roster. This is what he wanted, where you've got a year where you've got a lot of experience coming back, a junior and senior laden basketball team. And it'll be interesting to see. You know, I'm not up on exactly what Kentucky has coming back. I think I probably know.
Right.
But it'll be interesting. I'd imagine that Auburn will have something to say about it as well. But shaping up to be another monster year in the SEC.
No doubt. And the hunger factor is still there when you lose such a heartbreaker when you were just moments away from the Sweet 16. So and I've seen a few, you know, way too early top 25s that, you know, I've seen before everyone had, you know, decided whether to stay in the draft or not. And I don't think I've seen Tennessee outside of the top 10 in any of them. So a likely preseason top 10 team for the Vols. And last question, and if this throws you off guard and you don't know the answer, no big deal. I only bring it up because I just saw on Twitter today that the Gators released their non-conference schedule. Do you have any idea? Do they have any big names on the non-conference schedule? If I'm not mistaken, that North Carolina, that was a home and home. Y'all had been in Chapel Hill the year before, correct?
That series is over. I wish I had this in front of me. I know that they're playing, and I think the preseason NIT with Kansas is playing in that thing, and Marquette and somebody else really good. You know, Rick Barnes has scheduled pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
There's some,
no doubt.
There are going to be some decent teams. I think they're playing Gonzaga out in Arizona for some reason. And right. They've got, I don't know that the entire lineup
sure,
is
sure,
set,
sure.
But yeah, they've got a pretty nice schedule.
Yeah, man, it's so great for SEC hoops to be back. It's been so long. It was a little disappointment with the, you know, not the SEC not performing quite as well in the tournament as we would have hoped. But last year it was clear. I mean, we beat the Big 12 in the Big 12 SEC Challenge, and that was without Tennessee and Auburn, who were the, you know, at the top of the standings. So it's great to have SEC hoops back. Russell, we appreciate your time, man. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Russell 3_Smith, and check out his show, The Drive, from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday on Fox Sports Knoxville. Appreciate you taking some time for us, Russell, and we'll look forward to talking to you soon.
All right, Brian. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Games Galore 42. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Last segment of Games Galore 42. Thanks to Russell Smith out of Knoxville joining us. All right, let's go to Rivalry Weekend. Let me give you these lines on that. Actually, the Egg Bowl is on Thursday. Big revenge game for Mississippi State, and they are 11-point favorite at Ole Miss. On Friday, we've got VaTech -18 at home to the Wahoos. That's UVA in Charlottesville, for those not familiar. Oh, Nebraska's only a 3-point dog at Iowa. Wait, how are they only a 3-point dog? I would think Iowa would be a little more pricey there. So it's all dog spots. That's the only single-digit dog spot for Nebraska. All right, UCF -3.5 at USF. Let's hope we get a classic like we did last year. That was one of the best games of the season last year. Houston at Memphis. Memphis -2. Memphis is, they've got the transfer from ASU as their quarterback, if I'm not mistaken. Hold on. His name's on the tip of my tongue. Brady White, yeah. Well, if he's good, Memphis is going to be good. And I lean Memphis heavily, -2 at home against Houston. Things did not go great. I mean, I love Ed Oliver, obviously, for Houston, but Applewhite did not have a great first season. And Tony Pollard for Memphis. Hint to all special team coaches on the Memphis Tigers schedule, which includes Barry Odom of Missouri. And I almost wanted to add while we're talking to Russell that if Dooley does a good job of this offense and Odom at Missouri doesn't get that defense taken straightened out, he might get that job. Then again, maybe not. That's probably why I didn't say it to Russell, because he lived through Derek Dooley tenure in Knoxville. But Memphis is going to be good, man. They've got, they lose Anthony Miller and Riley Ferguson, which were two just two of the best in the history of Memphis football. In fact, as I look at my Memphis page, Riley Ferguson, did he only play 2 years there? Because he's the third all-time leading passer. Anthony Miller is easily... Harbo, I didn't put my readers on before this segment. Shame on me. Now, so much better.
It's a whole new world.
Yeah, so much better. All right, Anthony Miller's easily their leading wide receiver ever, or career receiving yards. But Tony Pollard, dude likes to score touchdowns on special teams. Don't kick it to him. They've also got Daryl Henderson back, 1,154 rushing yards, 9 touchdowns, and listen to this, average yards per carry, 8.9. And Patrick Taylor, 866 rushing yards, 13 touchdowns, 5.5 YPC yards per carry. Memphis will be good, especially if Brady White is good. And Brady White was a very highly recruited guy to Arizona State and that D-bag, Todd Graham. Okay. Washington minus... This is still Friday games of Rivalry Weekend. Washington -14.5 at Wazoo. Oklahoma -7 at West Virginia. Oregon -20 at Oregon State. in the Civil War. Okay, last game of the year I like. South Carolina plus 23 at Clemson. I know they've been absolutely obliterated by Clemson the last 2 years.
Think there's a chance?
Well, I'm not saying to win, but
I was gonna say, I was like, that's pretty
Clemson
big.
Clemson has a lot of injuries. Maybe they can win, but I'm just talking about South Carolina plus the 23.
Gotcha.
No, I'm not thinking upset like with the 14.5 spread against Georgia. That one is in Columbia. This one is in Clemson's Death Valley. Florida at FSU, the semis are 5.5. NC State minus 3 at UNC. BC minus 8.5 to the Cuse. My boy, Eric Dungy. Purdue minus 1.5 at IU. Ohio State against Michigan. Single digits, minus 7.5 for the Buckeyes.
Not bad.
Georgia minus 19 against Georgia Tech. Simple reminder, Paul Johnson's won 2 in a row between the hedges. Just a little reminder, just letting you know. Notre Dame at USC. USC minus 1.5. The Kitties of UK, the Fighting Jim Rohdies, 9.5-point dogs at Louisville. K-State plus 4 at Iowa State. Missouri minus 13 at home against Arkansas. God, I lost a lot of money on Missouri at Arkansas last year. Ugh, it's gross. Tennessee minus 1 at Vandy. Oh, I meant when Russell was talking about how the Florida-Tennessee rivalry had dissipated so much. I wanted to point out that I had said in the previous segment that they don't even have our line in the games of the year, which is a shame. All right, Alabama is a single-digit favorite in one game, minus 9 at home to Auburn, Iron Bowl 2018 edition. A&M and the Dumbos, minus 1.5 against LSU. Arizona, minus 8.5 to ASU. Utah, give me 2. Minus 15 to BYU. Boy, BYU not getting much respect in these games of the year. Nevada, plus 3 at UNLV. And then Navy, minus 7 at Army. There are your games of the year in review. I will tell you what I liked. You know, because I've told you 18 times, South Carolina plus 14.5 at home to Georgia. Syracuse plus 9.5 to Florida State. South Carolina plus 2.5 to A&M at home. Miss State plus 3 at LSU. Utah, give me 2, plus 4 at USC. Arizona, pick 'em at UCLA. Stanford plus 9.5 at Washington. Remember, only an underdog of 9.5 or more 3 times during David Shaw's tenure that is going into its 8th season. All 3 dog spots of 9.5 or more outright winning. South Carolina plus 23 at Clemson, and then slight leans to Stanford, pick 'em at Oregon. Wisconsin minus 16.5 at home to Nebraska, and West Virginia plus 9.5 at Texas. All right, UFC 226. Other than the co-main event, it was an outstanding card. But Harbo, we found the co-main event a gorgeous snoozer, did we not?
It was an amazing, boring fight.
And did you see them shove each other at the ceremonial weigh-ins on
Friday?
I
didn't see that.
That was the most action of them. There was more action there in the whole fight.
I don't know if Ngannou's just like scared now or...
Oh, he released a statement.
I mean, it was weird. He carried
his fear from the previous fight into this one.
It was weird, man.
Did you hear what Dana said about him?
No.
They asked, like, so what's going on with Ngannou? And he said that his ego got out of control after when he almost get decapitated over him.
Right.
He said that during training for the title fight with Miocic, he took off for France. Didn't even work out for like 2 weeks of camp.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Isn't that nuts?
Well, he got his ass handed to him.
Yeah, I mean, you never know if Dana's telling the fucking truth or not, but...
We were happy to win that. It was boring, but I'm what... 4 for 5 on my UFC picks now.
Oh,
boom.
And that's like a 3-1 dog.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I told you wrong earlier off air. Remember I said what idiot judge gave Ngannou a round?
Right.
Two judges gave him one round.
Which round?
Great question. It was 30-27, one judge. It was 29-20. Who in the hell? Ngannou did not throw more than three punches in any round.
I mean, I guess on that second round, like literally, I could see maybe somebody giving him one because they just didn't do anything. So, like, who do you give a round to when right. no fighter does right. anything on either side?
You know, I think they're allowed to call it a 10-10 or a 9-9. I think. I could be wrong. All right. Well, obviously, Cormier, we haven't gotten to him. I mean, just and my favorite thing about this, and loyal listeners know, I was the biggest John Jones fan in the world before all his shenanigans. And look, I'm not judging a man for messing up. What I do judge someone on is when they mess up and then they play the religion card. And then they mess up again. And then they play the religion card to get them out of it. And then they act like a total asshole. But then if it gets anything serious, the religion card again.
Right.
And that's Johnny Jones. That's Johnny Bones Jones. And so I know I think this is another thing we're talking about off air. So Daniel Cormier's father was murdered a long, long time ago.
Right.
Okay. And when they get in these little Twitter beefs and they're, you know, talking shit back and forth.
Yeah.
Jones has had a tendency to say to Cormier, and it's been done like maybe 5-6 times, who's your daddy? Okay. Now, the first time it happened, I don't know if Cormier came back at him and like told him what happened to his dad, but Cormier was saying this in an interview last week in one of the one of the media scrums,
right?
Because they had gotten into it on Twitter the night before, or whatever. He was telling the media, he's like, listen to this scumbag. This is what happened.
Right.
He had Dana, Jones did, had Dana call Cormier, like initiate a three-way call where all three of them are talking.
Right.
And Jones says to Cormier, with Dana mediating or what have you, says that I had no idea your father had been murdered and I wanted to apologize.
Right.
Okay. And so he does that little fake apology. But now he still goes after him on Twitter by going, who's your daddy? That's John Jones. That's not what a scumbag this guy is. So anyway, when he did that last week on Twitter, Cormier just goes, he said, whatever, you steroid cheater. And then he goes, you just sit back this weekend and you watch me be great. Okay. So after the fight, I tweeted, John Jones' social media accounts are all crickets. He just had to sit back and watch Cormier be great tonight.
Right.
Okay, and then I got after Jones a little bit in my rewind, my UFC 226 rewind. You can read it on VegasInsider.com if you wish. And let's see, when do I get into it here?
I was surprised DC won, man. I didn't think it was going to happen.
Oh, I was too. I mean, not shocked. You can't ever be shocked with anything in heavyweight, but yeah, no. And Miocic was having his way early.
Right.
First 2 minutes were all Miocic. I mean,
he stopped moving. He stopped dodging, man. He was just
Cormier taking punches. Started having a little success with those counter punches. And I think, and he said it afterward, he goes, after I felt him a couple of times, he goes, you got to remember, I train with Cain Velasquez every day. After I felt him, and look, he is powerful, but right. I was like, this is nothing I haven't felt before.
Right.
And that's when he said he started coming forward. Because he said, I felt like I took 3 or 4 of his best punches and I was fine. I mean, I'm sure they didn't tickle, but.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, in my rewind, I'm trying to get. Well, I go into a lot. I kind of make my case for Cormier and why he should be in the discussion with the greatest and whatnot. I kind of just want to. Yeah, that's not that good.
When do you think there's going to be a rematch?
Well, you know, Cormier turns 40 in March, and he's been saying for like 6 months that's his retirement date.
He's
now,
done.
He has said that since, you know, Lesnar's not going to be. He's got to do. First off, he's never going to get through 6 months of USADA unless he's.
Lesnar?
Well, right.
No way.
Yeah, like, so Chael.
That, unless he pumps
whoa,
up.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
Blood transfusion.
Hello, eye candy.
blood transfusion, maybe he'll get through if they drain him of all his blood.
Hello. Live guest? We'll take one.
Come on in.
Come on in. So, what a scumbag John Jones is. But so, Lesnar's not going to be ready for 6 months. So, Cormier, I don't even know why he said this. I would never go down to 205 again if I'm him. That just got to be a gruesome weight cut. But he said he would go down and fight Shogun if Shogun beats Ozdemir, who Cormier beat the last time.
Right.
What's his first name? Why am I? I'm skipping a blank on Ozdemir's first name. Oh wait, I got it. It is Vulcan.
Vulcan.
I thought of it before I got there. So Shogun fights Vulcan. He said he'd fight Shogun, but then Gustafson. Now, the night after the fight, he said, I hear Gustafson's been talking about how he beat me. And that was a split decision fight. He goes, so he can get it again. But then he changed his tune and said Shogun. Gustafson came out yesterday and is like, fight me or give up the belt. Which I understand Gustafson. I mean, he's been the number one contender for, or at least the number one behind Jones and Cormier for years. Years! Right. He has never got his rematch with Jones, which is such a shame. And, he just hasn't gotten a title shot again. Now, Rumble Johnson kind of got in the way of that. I also wrote in my rewind that Rumble Johnson was going to kick Jones' ass too, but Jones got arrested. So anyway, Mike Perry and Paul Felder was a great, beautiful bloodbath. Felder, what a stud. I mean, he gets a big cut of his right eye. Then he, in the second round, he gets a hematoma. I called it a baby hematoma. Easy for me to say, right?
Right.
And then he broke his arm also. And it was a split decision. And they swung to the fences. And those are the fighters I like. If it's a close fight, last 10, 15 seconds, really not. It was more like the last 3 minutes for those guys. But you go for it, man. Yeah. Go for it.
Fight and hard.
Anthony Pettis, career-saving victory. He was 2-5 in his last seven, and he defeats Michael Chiesa, who obviously had a tough weight cut, has told Ariel Helwani he thought he was going to die, said he's never fighting lightweight again. He wants to go up to welterweight at 170. Roundtree, a minute and 36 seconds to dust Saki, first round KO. I thought Uriah Hall came to fight the other night. He really did. He bloodied Paulo Costa up, the Brazilian, who I don't know how that guy gets to middleweight, and he looks like he's passing USADA somehow. But anyway, Costa got bloodied up by Hall. I thought Hall looked as good as he's looked in a long time. But eventually Costa got him a mid-second round knockout. But I thought Uriah Hall looked good. Rafael Assuncao, he's now 11-1 in the bantamweight division. Only lost to the current champ, Dillashaw. He should get the winner of Dillashaw-Garbrandt, which is going to be Garbrandt, by the way. That's our next pay-per-view next month, UFC 227. Lando Venata fell to 1-3-1 in the UFC, losing to Dracar Close. But Venata, his first four fights, three fights of the night, one performance of the night. Don't need to worry about any job security, buddy. And then I lost on Max Griffin. I lost on Chiesa, which is why I needed Lewis so bad. And I pumped my amount up. That really worked good. It really worked good, Harbo. Okay. So that's you. Any other, what did you see at UFC 220? Anything else you want to comment on other than I hope you enjoyed, like me, that John Jones was sitting in Albuquerque somewhere watching him be great.
Doing cocaine.
Oh, I'm sure.
No, man, sure. It was fun to watch, and it was a surprising upset, so it was all good.
By the way, the payouts, Stipe, 750 large, no win bonus. Cormier, 500 large, no win bonus. But, and Perry and Felder got robbed of fight of the night in 50 large, so they gave four performance of the night bonuses. Not that I'm saying I don't agree with the performance of the night bonuses, because Cormier certainly deserved one. Pettis, yeah. I mean, you submit the BJJ guy and Chiesa. That's pretty. Oh, and he got 30% of Chiesa's purse. Pettis had a huge day. He got 135 to win, or I mean, 135 to show, 135 to win. That's 270. He got 30% of Chiesa's purse. Then he got a $50,000 bonus, and that's before the Reebok bonus, which is probably for him $7,000 or $8,000.
It's a good night.
Huh?
That's a good night.
That's a good night at the office, man. That's a really good night. I mean, you almost make a half or more than halfway to a half mil. That's a good damn night. Tough 27 finale on Friday. Israel Adesanya looked legit. He put it on Brad Tavares, who was game as hell. Derek Lewis got 260 large, 130 to show, 130 bonus. Ngannou got 100 large. Perry was 40 and 40, so he got 80. Felder got 46. And on and on and so on and what have you. What else we got, Harbo? Fuck baseball. Fuck soccer.
I think that's it, man.
All right. Thanks to Russell Smith. Thanks to Harbo. Games Galore 42 in the books. We will talk to you next week, hoping to get KIV on. Maybe Christopher. Try to get Christopher Smith today. He was traveling. I want to get Brad Powers back again, too. So be on the lookout for Games Galore 43 next week. We are over and out. Thanks for listening.
Happy birthday, darling.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
I look at some teams that have tough schedules that might be in the mix, some of them not in the mix in terms of a national player. But I look at a schedule like an LSU and think that's a really tough schedule. If you look at it, they've got, first of all, in their own league, they've got the two best teams in the league. Not everybody has to play Alabama and Georgia. Those are the two best programs, two best teams in the SEC by far, and you have to play both of them. That's going to be quite a challenge for LSU. They open up the season playing Miami and in a very difficult game. That's a real challenge. And, you know, going back, they get Georgia at home, and they get Alabama at home in Baton Rouge. But those are games that if LSU played them in Baton Rouge, they played them in Athens or Tuscaloosa. They played them in Iowa. They're probably not going to win those games. The swing games, the Auburn, the Florida game, the A&M games, those are all on the road. So if you look at the schedule and analyze it, it becomes a little complex in that if you do as I do and say it is very unlikely that they beat Georgia or Alabama, but the Auburn, Florida, A&M games are swing games that you're going to all have to go on the road. So how does LSU come out of those games?
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.